Thanks so much for joining me for episode 21 of The Mark of a Druid. If you'd like more information about me, the author, Rhonda R. Carpenter, please, by all means, go to themarkofadruid.com. On to our story. Chapter 30, The Truth Be Told. Samantha sauntered from her office. Lori, puffy-eyed, greeted her. "Something I can help you with, Miss Page. I'm leaving for Eve's. Let her know I'm on my way." Without another word, she left the building, her thoughts on her own success. Soon the project would be hers. Eve would be gone, and she could claim the media attention for the breakthrough work. Being able to destroy those she hated was the biggest bonus of all. She could still see Lori's tear-streaked face and knew this mess with James was eating away at her. For once, the old crone would get exactly what she deserved. Why should she be happy when Samantha had suffered because of her? And James? Well, he always was a puppet, and would remain so in this lifetime, too. Upon reaching her Lexus, she opened her cell. Jessica Phillips answered her phone after checking the caller ID. "Hey, girl. Now what's up your sleeve?" "Hi, Jess. So, tell me the tale. How did it go with our little joke?" "I swear, Samantha, if I had stripped naked, this guy would not have made a pass at me. I did everything I could to entice him. He just wouldn't take the bait. So I raised a fuss and got the attention of everyone in the place. He seemed a little shook up, but that little receptionist? Well, I thought she was going to have a meltdown." A throaty laugh followed and withered into nothingness. "Good job, my friend. What did you want me to do about Eve McCormick? You know, she left me a message. How far do you want me to take this?" "Why don't you return her call and tell her you're consulting with your attorney and that you'll get back to her Friday? That should keep her where I want her for a few days." "And where is it you want her?" Jessica's sneer was clear even through the telephone. "I want her off balance," is all Samantha said. But her mind, twisted with an image of Eve on the ground, writhing in pain, her spirit broken, her reputation totally ruined. "Hey, Jess, thanks again. I owe you one," Samantha said. "I already told you. This one's on me. Talk to you later in the week." The smile that played on Samantha's face lasted almost the entire drive to Eve's house. Eve sat in the living room feeling defeated as she reviewed James's files. So far, she'd found nothing out of the ordinary. He did have a large number of female clients, but that was not unusual considering the business. Eve opened her entertainment system and slipped the VHS tape into the machine. Her phone rang, and she lifted the receiver without looking to see who was calling. "This is Eve McCormick." Her voice was drone-like. "Ms. McCormick, this is Jessica Phillips. Thank you for..." Eve's voice was promptly cut off by the snarling woman on the other end of the phone. "I'm returning your call simply to advise you of my intention to speak with my attorneys. I have never in my life been treated with such blatant disrespect as I was at your establishment today," Eve stammered, trying to interrupt the slur of hostility emanating from the woman. Ms. Phillips, could you please tell me what happened?" "No, I think not. My attorneys will speak for me. Expect to hear from them by Friday. Good night." The connection went dead. Attorneys? God, she's got more than one. This is not good, Eve thought. She replaced the handset gently in the cradle. Cosmo dashed past Eve with a hiss as David's blue sports car pulled into the driveway. She let out a sigh. She had hoped to be able to see the tape before her partner started to arrive. Eve opened the front door, not giving David a chance to ring the bell. "Hello, Eve." A knowing smile crossed his face as he walked past her. "Can I get you something to drink?" she asked. "Have any wine? I think this may call for a drink." His eyes sparked, and a childlike grin made his one dimple stand out. Old feelings, which should have long been dead, surfaced in Eve. Something seemed to push at her mind, and she found herself thinking about what they could have been. Then, as quickly as the feelings surfaced, they dissipated. She forced herself to remember how he had treated her. "Sure I do. Let me open a bottle. Is Merlot okay with you?" She walked past him to the kitchen, returning with two long-stem glasses, moderately filled with her favorite wine. "We're waiting for Samantha and Lisa to get here, but while we wait, do you want to help me look through these files?" With a nod, he sat himself down in the overstuffed chair. Eve handed him half the stack of manila folders. At 8:30, Samantha sauntered to the front door of Eve's home and let herself in like she owned the place. "What a hideous drive. How can you live way out here?" Her eyes acknowledged David, but she said nothing to him. "I love where I live," Eve simply stated. "Can I get you a glass of wine?" "If you must," Samantha said, with a faux grin on her face. The wave of her hand felt like a dismissal to Eve. "Where's Lisa? I'd like to get this over with. I've a date." She winked at David and seductively ran her tongue over her full bottom lip. Returning from the kitchen, Eve handed the glass of wine to Samantha. "She should be here any time," she said. The three partners reviewed the last of James's files and found nothing at all to suggest he was guilty. At 9:15, Samantha began to fidget. "Where the hell is Lisa?" She stood, paced the floor, and glared angrily whenever she was behind Eve. "Listen, I have to go. Can we just watch the damn tape and get this over with?" Eve hesitated, but took the remote from the table and started the tape. The screen flashed a sequence of numbers, 114783, in big white digital letters on a black background. James entered the room, dressed in khaki pants and a beige shirt. His demeanor seemed professional as he invited the client into his office. "Ms. Phillips, please have a seat in the recliner," he said, placing his hand on her lower back and guiding her to the seat. She was a lovely woman with short, cropped, light-colored hair and a slender face. She wore a black pantsuit and a V-neck white sweater beneath a jacket, which caught her waistline at just the right spot to accentuate her rear end. Reviewing her intake form, James sat at his desk and began a normal therapist-patient dialogue. This went on for about 5 minutes, and just as James was about to begin his hypnotic induction, the television screen went black. David snatched the remote from the table and fast-forwarded the tape. It was blank. It clicked to its end and began to rewind. When it had finished, David pressed play again. The three partners watched the scene again. Something had gone wrong with the equipment, or this tape had been recorded over. The session was not there. "Thanks for wasting my time," Samantha sniffed. "Listen, I say if there's no recording, I have no comment." "The ball's in your court, Eve." She stared at her in disbelief. "No comment, is it? Fine, Samantha. You're a big help. Why don't you just go on your date?" Eve said. Before she could even regret what she had said, Samantha walked out the door. She didn't even say goodbye. David and Eve had the perfect view of her backside as the door slammed shut. "Oh, my God," Eve said, stunned. "Well, you know how she is," David said. "Yeah, I know how she is, and I'm sick and tired of her acting like the queen bee." David's mind spun, the word queen repeated as if echoing in his ears. "The tape is not going to help with this decision. You have to talk to the victim, Eve." "Victim? We don't know James did anything wrong at all." There was nothing in his files to suggest he's out of line. What was on the tape seemed absolutely professional. "And Jessica Phillips refused to tell me what happened when I spoke with her." She held her head in her hands, then looked up at David. "Excuse me, I need to go to the restroom." She left the room. David seized the opportunity to check the timer on the stereo system. He found it, as he thought he would. Set perfectly at 1:32 a.m., Cosmo sat perched on the stairway, watching him with steely yellow eyes. The cat's teeth were exposed in a hiss. David took a step back. He almost didn't make it to the seat before he heard the bathroom door open. "I'm gonna go. Do me a favor. Go to bed. Get some sleep. And call me if I can help." He gave her the most sympathetic smile. "All right, I will." She walked him to the door. Kaz ran after him, striking with his paws at each of David's steps. She snatched the cat up from the floor and scolded him as she locked the door. David slipped into the seat of his car. Perched on his steering wheel was an envelope. He held it to his nose and inhaled the scent of his Samantha. As he rounded the corner out of sight, he pulled over and read, "My love, come to me now. I wish to spend not one more moment without your touch. I command it." "Who is your queen?" David whispered. "You are." And drove straight to Samantha's house. When David had finally driven down the street, Eve began to cry. She was exhausted, not to mention entirely frustrated with Samantha's bullshit attitude and the fact that Lisa never even bothered to show up at all. What on earth would make Lisa care so little about the project's reputation? Eve's world was spiraling out of control, and it seemed there would be no one there to catch her. Eve poured a glass of water and made her way to the bedroom, beaten. Cosmo unceremoniously snuck beneath the covers and tucked himself into a ball at the bend of her hip. His chin was pulled down to his chest, and his forehead was against her thigh. She could feel the vibration of his purring ever so faintly against her skin. She reached to pet him. Her eyes rested on her wrists, now completely healed from the bruising and rope burns. Eve said a silent prayer that at least they were gone. She turned off the light and yanked the covers over her shoulders. Eve had no idea what she was going to do about James. Everyone else, who had showed up, had left the final call up to her, and she guessed it was truly her decision to make in any case. Sure would have been nice to have some constructive input, though, she thought. The clock's red block letters glared at her. 1:30 a.m. She needed sleep. Just as she closed her eyes and released the tension from her shoulders, the sound of a soft, lilting flute drifted faintly to her ears. Cosmo turned over in his sleep, pulling his warm body away from her. Then a wave of nausea hit. She was dizzy. Her eyelids slammed shut, and the harder she tried to open them, the more difficult it became to exert the effort. Finally, she gave in. Cold and confused, Alian rose from the low fire. She had to get out of this house. Her captor was sure to return, and after their last confrontation, she had no desire to face him again. The haze was clearing from her head. The feeling had fully returned to her legs and feet. Her knees were scraped. The dried blood from the wounds had clotted on milky shins, leaving black streaks caked all the way to her ankles. The rope burns on Alian's wrists were only an uncomfortable covering for the bone-deep bruising which lay beneath. She scanned the room. She lifted the beeswax candle from the table and lit it with the twig from the fire. Cupping a trembling hand around the flickering wick, she moved toward the bundle on the floor in the corner. The light of the flame illuminated the saffron of her cloak. Alian hoped her clothes were still inside. She had no more than pulled the smock over her head when she heard muddled voices approaching. Her clothing was damp and smelled rancid from the many days she had spent in them at sea. Alian quickly buckled her crane bag at her waist, extinguished the candle, and stepped into the shadows near the door. The voices grew louder, and her mind spun with the vision of her captor. Those eyes of his seemed to reach into her very soul. What was it about those eyes? Her feet were securely tucked into her shoes. She was ready to bolt out the door at the first opportunity. The voices on the other side of the door spoke in low tones. "Do you think she'll ever forgive me?" "That will be for her to say, Adam of the Amber Eyes." There was something about the woman's voice. She sounded just like... but Alian could not complete her thought before the door opened and three brat-covered figures stepped inside. "Where is she?" She recognized her captor's voice. The door still shielded her from view, but Alian knew that would not last long. Without a second thought, she lunged for the opening and pushed forward with all of her might. The night air rushed around her body, filling her nostrils with its moist essence. She took no time to look left or right. She ran forward. The night was black, except for the glow of a torch, which must have been behind her. A shadowy form stepped into her path. Alian ran headlong into a barrel-chested young man. He gave her a large and friendly smile, and a low rumbling laugh came from his throat. "Aye, lass, and where would you be going in such a hurry? I'm sure Adam would be having a word with you. There's family here to greet you, and you're leaving without so much as an introduction. Not at all what they'd be expecting, I'm sure. Why don't you go back in and hear what they have to say? I'm sure if you still want to leave, no one will hold you against your will." "Oh, and I'm supposed to trust you on this, am I?" She glared at him, but the warmth of his smile made it most difficult to hold the crease between her brows. "I are, and I would not be lying to you. You are much too important for me to be making you an enemy." He reached for her elbow and gently turned her around. Three faceless, backlit figures stood at the doorway. One towered over the others, hands perched upon his hips. "Him," she thought. Carmag tucked his arm in Alian's and began to walk toward the doorway. "My name is Carmag of the Sword. I swear to you on this blade that I will not allow anyone to harm you, nor hold you against your will." He pulled from its sheath a gleaming, well-cared-for short sword and held it before her eyes. The edge was so fine, Alian was sure he used it to shave his face clean. "You were not brought here to become a slave, and had you not fought so fiercely on the voyage, things may have been different." Well, finally, someone was talking to her as if she were the daughter of a king. Alian, however, remained unconvinced she was not a captive, or that her family would have her tied and drugged just to talk to her. As the couple reached the doorway, the torchlight caught the eyes of her captor. Transfixed, Alian stood rooted at the threshold. "Adam, I do believe you have something to say to this lass." That voice, she knew that voice, but it couldn't be. Dubjila was far from here. "I do, my friend, I do." Adam bowed at the waist. "Carmag, please see where brought mead, fresh water, and wood. Then find Strongheart, and fetch Alian clean clothes and food." Carmag turned to Alian and grinned. "You'll be safe. I will return shortly." He lifted her hand to his lips in a pretend kiss, spun on his heel, and strode into the darkness. Alian stood facing her captor. "So, Adam is your name. Would you like to tell me why, in the name of Alwen, you took me from my home and my family?" Stubbornly, she crossed her arms over her chest and waited for an answer. He cleared his throat and fumbled for his words. I did what I was asked to do. I fear I've never been faced with a woman of your, shall we say, determination before. I apologize for the secrecy. These are times when I do not always know whom I can fully trust. It was necessary to keep your identity from my crew. I could think of no other way. His hand gestures claimed stupidity, but Alian knew this man was much more than he appeared. No other way. You treat me with no more respect than you would have the mud on your fancy boots. How dare you try to justify your actions by using my safety as the cause? You're nothing more than From over his shoulder, she heard the clearing of a throat and a familiar voice. Alian had thought she would never hear the sound of Dubjila's voice again. "Alian of the Red Hair, come inside, child. We have much to talk of and little time to lose before night is gone." This time, the decision was hers, under her own power, and with a clear and ecstatic mind she crossed the threshold and hoped to be walking out the same way. Alion pushed past the tall, amber-eyed devil. Dubjila, how did you find me? How did you get here? After a long embrace, the old crone held Alion at arm's length. It has been a lifetime since I saw this face. You, my child, have the beauty of your mother. Where is Athene? Tears pooled in Alion's eyes. She is safe with Dubjila. I have sent word of your arrival. But you're Dubjila. No, child. I'm Brosna of the Standing Stones. Dubjila is my twin sister. When your true mother was murdered, I stayed behind to clear the way for your return. Aroke and Dubjila took you to the safety of Britain. No one knew of your whereabouts. In that way, we were assured you would be safely grown to a woman. The old crone spread Alion's arms, taking in the sight of her. And that you have done. Alion's knees buckled, but before she hit the floor, her eyes locked on Adam's. And those amber eyes. A large pair of strong hands scooped her up and gently sat her on the bench beside Brosna. This Alion is Emir. She is your half-sister, daughter of the Beru, wife of Citric Silkenbeard, the king of Duvlin. She's come to welcome you home. A woman, no more than 5 years, Alion Senior nodded her head. A demure smile crossed her heart-shaped face. She was lovely in a plain sort of way, with large, doe-like eyes and fair, freckled skin. I hope we will be friends always, she said, with just the slightest hint of sadness in her voice. She stopped, straightened her back, and then began again, a smile on her heart-shaped face. I've never had a sister before. Father talked to me once of you, and the great loss he felt. He told me you were taken away for your own safety. He said you had a very special purpose, and someday we may have the chance to be best friends. You also have many brothers, all of whom you will meet soon enough. I wanted to be the first to welcome you home. This is for you. From beneath her cloak, she handed Alion a small cloth-wrapped package. Alion held the cloth in her hands, the soft linen pressed between her palms. She had no idea what to say to any of this. What are they all talking about? She thought. My mother was Aroke of the White Hair. My father, Cnut, successor to the throne of England. I'm not sure you have the right person. Her words rang in her own ears as not quite true. Cnut had tried to tell her, but she would not believe. Alion stared, speechless, at Brosna. Why had Dubjila never mentioned a word? There was no denying that Brosna was identical to Dubjila. They had even grayed in the same way, with wisps of smoky white at the temples, forming a crown over darker shades of silver. The clear blue of Brosna's eyes bore into Alion, looking for a sign of acceptance. Ask your questions, child. I will tell you everything I know. I'd like to say thank you to all my listeners. Please come back and see me again next week if you have questions about The Mark of a Druid, or you'd like to know more about me, the author. Please go to my websites at themarkofadruid.com or rondacarpenter.com. Until next time, take care.